My goodness, you're all very good meditators. Thank you. And Amy, thank you for filling in to be service leader. And Bill, thank you again for all you do. And thank you to everybody for being here today, especially on this nice, crisp November day. And it's supposed to be in the 60s part of this next week before it snows. So there we have it. This morning, I want to talk about history a bit. I studied history both in graduate school and undergraduate school, and it's always been a fascination to me to learn more about, if you will, our ancestors and our cultures. And so this morning, this has turned into a part one of two services, because I realized there was so much to talk about that I'd be standing here for an hour, you'd all go to sleep, and it wouldn't connect. So the other half of this will be in early January. So the question in my mind was, is history dangerous? Is there a danger when we look at our history and consider what it means? And I'm going to say, yes, it can be dangerous. Because history, as I understand it, is largely made up of stories. And stories, as we know, can be embellished or changed or even dropped. History can be cut and sliced into pieces that we prefer to hear and read and then cast aside the ones we really don't want to talk about or listen about. And the problem is that we base our understanding of what happened in history with stories that turn into mythos, into the guiding myths that can represent, for example, America. And then that narrative will enforce itself over time into, well, this is who we are and this is how we came to be. And because history is so broad and expansive, we cannot hope to know and learn all the stories and decisions that people made to bring that history to life and into story and to something that we learn in school. We can't possibly do that. Now, here are a couple of examples. One example is a standard memorial service for someone in a Unitarian Universalist congregation. Most of you have probably been to at least one, but basically what we do is we encourage people to get up and share their stories and memories of the person who has died. And I'm going to just mention, not specifically, I remembered Cynthia Burton's service that we did here earlier this year. Every family who has a person who dies, and we do a memorial service, I ask them to prepare a one-page, single-space biography of the person with a font that is no smaller than 12. That's not easy to do. And I use this, one, to read about the person's story, but also that the family has an opportunity to say what is really essential in this person's life, their birth, their family, other events, and put it all in one page. And of course, it's only an outline. It's just a skeleton of that person's history. And then I invite people to come up and share their personal stories. In this case that I'm thinking of Cynthia. And those stories just begin to flesh out a affirming and more three-dimensional story about the person and their life. Now generally, not always, but generally, people will come up and they will share funny and affirming stories about the person who has died. And I've done, probably at least 100 memorial services in my time, and I have never, ever once heard someone get up and say, person X, whoever it might be, person X was a mean, angry, and unkind SOB and deserved to die. I've never heard that once. History and its stories are incomplete at all levels. We cannot hope to describe every moment and every memory of our lives or the life of a person who has died. We have our secrets, our failures, and our stories that we hope no one will ever know. So one aspect is a realization that history of our lives is necessarily incomplete, and that's why the stories become so powerful. Next, history is also lost. Try to remember just for a moment your very first memory. When you were a child, when you were an infant, the first memory that you can touch on of your life. And then imagine all the other moments, minutes, hours, days, years of your life where your memory is either incomplete or it's been cast away. We cannot even share the memories of our entire life, unless, of course, we have a photographic memory. But for most of us, it's little snippets. That history is lost. And sometimes maybe it's a good thing. Here's another example of lost history. Please look at the photo on the front of your order of service. This photograph was on the wall of an old schoolhouse in Bedford, Texas, outside Fort Worth. It showed a class picture from 1917, room 4. Bedford was a very small rural town with mostly farming. Now, the schoolhouse had burned down several times and been rebuilt before later it became a venue for gatherings like weddings. The picture does not show a lot of detail, but look at the faces of the children. Look at their clothing. What does that picture say to us over a century later? When I looked at that photograph on the wall, I was struck by several things. The little boys looked like prematurely old men. I saw very few smiles. The girls tended to be better dressed up than the boys. After I did the wedding service, I found the director of the building and I asked about the photo. Did it have a special story? And a person said that the boys were mostly in their work clothes because they got up and started work on their farms at dawn every morning. And they had no opportunity to be able to change clothes. And in fact, oftentimes, they had no other clothing. I asked about the names of the children. The person told me that all the records of the school had been burned in the fires. No one knew the names of the children or even the teachers. It was lost. Those stories are lost to us. Our history has no mention of those people in that photograph other than the story we make up about it. Did those children grow up and have children and grandchildren of their own? Possibly. Do their descendants live in the area now? Likely. And if I was writing a history of Bedford, would I be able to perhaps find those families and get the names of those children? Well, perhaps so, with enough research. But it would take quite a bit of research, including census records, to be able to figure out who was who. All I have is that one photograph and the stories that I could imagine based on the faces, the expressions, and the clothing. I have nothing else to go on. And see, that is the history that I create when I look at that photo, as we imagine it might have been. I imagine those children living and working on farms, and probably a number of them abused, a number of them who are probably Mexican or Hispanic or American Indian. But I make up a story to make some sense out of the photograph. And it could be totally wrong. So why is this important to us today? Well, Unitarian Universalist history is incomplete and sometimes is dead wrong. The expression, which I'm sure many of us know, "You need not think alike to love alike," is one of our most cherished statements. And it was supposedly said by Francis David, who was a Transylvanian Unitarian from the 1500s. He didn't say it. Reverend Peter Hughes wrote an article in the UU World in 2012. This is what he wrote. And I met him years ago, and he was a thorough researcher. This is what he said. "No one who has quoted Francis David as saying, 'We need not think alike to love alike,' has ever cited a source. Furthermore, the saying is almost identical to a well-attested quotation from the Methodist founder, John Wesley, who asked in a sermon called Catholic Spirit, 'Though we cannot think alike, may we not love alike?' But that saying has become part of the mythos, the story, the structure of our religion. Does it matter if it was true or not? What do you think? It's something we might imagine," he said. And of course, throughout history, as we understand it, the stories of great people are often embellished because we say, well, we don't know if so-and-so said this, but if they had said it, this is what they would have said. And that's how history becomes embellished over time. I'm sure we've followed the current National American conversation, usually with a lot of yelling and bad words, about our American history. We've probably heard about critical race theory, the 1619 Project from the New York Times earlier this year tells a very different story of America that is very hard for us as white people to even hear, because it goes against the mythos that we were brought up to understand and expect. Most of us grew up with versions of American history that are one-sided. I was taught that the Confederate States of America seceded from the Union because of states' rights. I was brought up in Maine, by the way. Statues to Confederate generals were statues of heroes. The Civil War, or the Lost Cause, became romanticized, especially in the South. And I can tell you from personal experience, it still resonates 170 years later. I learned that when I lived in South Carolina, there were some topics you never bring up at all unless you want to be called a lot of bad words. And by the way, that did happen. We hold on to the stories that are affirming and agree with what we learned as children, especially white children. And that's one reason why I used Dick Gregory's words in the opening words this morning. We learned a story that was incomplete because of the words, and really it wasn't a correct story. And it needed to be changed. If embellished and wrong, we needed to bring it back into balance. History can be dangerous if we don't hear the entire story of ugliness as well as the glorious, because we carry both, not only in our lives, but in the American story. And there's much more to discuss about our flawed American history, and I'm going to continue this topic, as I said earlier, in January, the danger of history. And I'd like to leave you with a quote from the Black American writer and activist James Baldwin. It encapsulates what I keep persistently thinking about, the both and rather than the either or of our shared history as Americans. What he said was, "American history is more beautiful and more terrible than anything anyone has ever said about it. American history is more beautiful and more terrible than anything anyone has ever said about it." But note, he doesn't say just terrible or just beautiful. It's both. It's both and rather than either or. So we, our children and grandchildren and children at large, our people who are Black and white and brown and gay and trans and straight, we all need to learn the both and, because we need to understand what the idea and the vision of America and the world is all about. People have asked me, "Do you believe in American exceptionalism?" And they're usually horrified when I say yes. We can be exceptionally good and exceptionally bad, usually at the same time. So let's remember our history, our story, the history of this building, this church, because it's far richer than we could ever imagine. The same is true of Meadville, our country, and the whole world. It's not just like a photograph where we guess what happened to each person. We have to come to terms with our history. May it be so. Peace, amen, shalom, blessed be, namaste.